In 1906, within a few months, the details of the promised reforms were announced in terms of a set of laws that became known as the Fundamental Laws. And in many respects, these represented a real, serious effort to include people for the first time in the formulation of policy. Political parties were legalized. Elections to the Duma, the parliament, all Russian men from all classes were to be allowed to participate. And the Duma was given real legislative authority. It could pass laws. But in other respects, this new Duma, the new legislature, proved to be less an effective channel for popular redress of grievances than a constantly frustrating reminder of how the autocracy was not willing to accept true political reform. This was visible in the fact that there were many limitations on the reforms as they were announced in the Fundamental Laws, and even more so in 1907, when many of these rules were changed suddenly. First of all, voting laws to the Duma were skewed in favor of classes the government most trusted, initially landowners and peasants, though in 1907, after dealing with two Dumas, both of which it closed down after just a handful of months, partly due to constant protests on the floor of the Duma, it was decided that the peasant delegates weren't all that conservative after all, and it was changed to favor landowners. The legislative power of this Duma, which was not elected on equal or universal terms, was also restricted. The Tsar kept for himself the power to veto any piece of legislation that he didn't happen to like. On top of that, so he wouldn't have to always do that, an upper house was created, made out of an existing body, this body of notables known as the State Council, half of whose members under the new law would be appointed by the Tsar personally, the rest well-established notables there by right of position in society, sort of like a House of Lords, but much more appointed. And this State Council was given the power to veto anything the Duma passed that it didn't like, for which it was often known as the gravedigger of democratic legislation in Russia. Finally, just to be sure, as if this weren't enough, the legislative authority of the Duma was limited by Article 87, the notorious Article 87 of the Fundamental Laws, that said the government could at any time it wanted to declare a state of emergency and pass any law it wished while the Duma was out of session, which it would be during a state of emergency. Perhaps even more significant, the Duma's competence as an institution was restricted. A large part of its budget was out of control, had no control over the military or foreign policy, for example. And even more important, day-to-day political power in the Duma, in the Russian government, was in the hands of ministers. Ministers whom the Tsar appointed and who were not responsible to the legislature. The only right the legislature had was what was called interpolation, the right to ask a minister to come and stand before you and explain a policy, and then you would criticize it, and they would go off, and nothing would change except you were more and more annoyed, which was happening increasingly among even the moderate Duma deputies. This isn't to say that the constitutional experiment, as it was called, of 1906 to 1914, when the war came, was a failure. The Duma did, in many ways, offer people a public voice and a measure of public power such had never existed before in Russia. But it didn't satisfy most people. Most of the nation, after all, was unrepresented. In fact, half the seats in the Duma were held by the gentry, who represented 1% of the population. And even those gentry that dominated the Duma through the Oktoberist Party, which was, as a result, the largest, were often dissatisfied by the government's refusal to really let them have influence over the government, especially over the ministers. Needless to say, social reforms left peasants and workers dissatisfied, and even workers who were allowed to strike and form unions found themselves constantly harassed and under the supervision of the state. If anything, one might suggest all these half-hearted reforms only whetted people's appetites for more. Next time, I'm going to look more deeply into society, in particular into the lives of peasants and then workers, to understand the social problems we're adding to the mixes of challenge that the government was facing and that fueled desires for change, in particular that fueled the still greater upheaval that was to come that would make 1905 look modest, the 1917 revolution.